Happy to be here, happy to support the work of this important organization. I spent 2 years writing a book about marriage, and you know, the main question on my mind was, what is marriage? This seemingly simple question of what is marriage? And the reason I chose that is a subject to spend 2 years thinking about is because I was very curious and perplexed by the answers to this question that are prevalent in the North American family debate. So I just want to read you a couple of quick definitions of marriage that are recent and common, and I'm sure they'll strike you as very familiar. Here's one from a columnist in the New Republic magazine. Marriage is, more than anything else, the expression of love. Here's one from a sociology professor. Now, marriage is seen by most people as love, intimacy, happiness. Here's one by E.J. Graff in her book called What is Marriage For? This is her definition. Marriage is a commitment to live up to the rigorous demands of love, to care for each other as best we humanly can. Here's one from a judge in my home state of New York, on the New York State Supreme Court. Marriage is, quote, a unique expression of a private bond and a profound love between a couple. Here's one of my favorites by a columnist from the Philadelphia Inquirer. He wants to know what marriage is, and here's his answer. Marriage is sometimes referred to as an institution, people like Doug North. Marriage is sometimes referred to as an institution, but that's an odd application of the term. The Department of Defense is an institution. The University of California is an institution. A marriage is a private arrangement between parties committed to love. So, and I'll tell you, in America, in the United States, we look to our neighbor to the north. You people in Canada is on the cutting edge of this trend, because here is from the Law Commission of Canada report from a couple of years ago called Beyond Conjugality, Recognizing and Supporting Close Personal Adult Relationships. Here is the definition of marriage put forward in that report. The state's objective underlying contemporary regulation of marriage relate essentially to the facilitation of private ordering, providing an orderly framework in which people can express their commitment to one another, receive public recognition and support, and voluntarily assume a range of legal rights and obligations. So what we see is that marriage is defined by these legal thinkers in your country and in the legal thinkers and opinion leaders in my own country. Marriage is the public recognition of a private relationship that is really defined by the couple itself. And I was very curious about this. And that's why I spent 2 years trying to come up with a better answer to the question, what is marriage? Because what is wrong with this definition of marriage as an expression of love? Well, let's just start with the fact that it's so abstract and thin as to be almost meaningless. I mean, you know, if marriage is an expression of love, if marriage is a private commitment between two people, well, of course, you know, I've expressed love to a number of people in my life, and I have private commitments, and they're emotionally involving, and I'm sure they contribute in some sense to social stability, but none of those factors explain who I'm married to and why I would be married. So the sugary notion that marriage is an expression of love, while true enough, is so thin as to really, you might as well just not be describing anything at all. Secondly, if marriage doesn't have a public dimension, why would the public be interested in it? If marriage is only a private, a question of what the Law Commission of Canada calls private ordering, why would the public care at all? Is it in the public interest to regulate friendships and private emotional entanglements? Is it in the state interest to regulate all expressions of love and commitment? Of course not, and the state doesn't do this. So, if marriage has no public dimension, then there's no reason for a society at all to care about it. So what purports to be a definition actually becomes a negation of the thing itself, and our effort to understand marriage really becomes a kind of a going out of business sale, because there's really nothing left to discuss if marriage has no public dimension. A third reason to be very skeptical of this marriage as a private bond idea is that most of the really interesting stuff gets left out. For example, sex. S-E-X. Sex. In none of these definitions, they don't go within 1,000 miles of the idea that sex, intercourse, sweat, jealousy, heat. Marriage is the social recognition of a sexual relationship. So why would that get left out? Another thing that gets left out is children. Most of these definitions, including the ones that I've cited from the courts, go out of their way emphatically to insist that marriage has nothing to do with children, that marriage is one thing and children is another, and the two, if they interconnect, are only a question of private ordering and has nothing to do with anything that's essential to our understanding of what marriage is. So for those three reasons and others, I was very just curious and disturbed by the fact that everywhere we looked, marriage was being defined in this certain way as the private relationship, and when really, isn't it true that it's something else? So what is the something else? Well, I went back to the very beginning. I went back to the oldest marriage laws I could find, the first ones, and they come from an area that's now Iraq, and they were written a long time ago. And I just want to tell you, one of the most moving things I've ever read is from a man named Lipit Ishtar. He was the ruler of an area in Mesopotamia around the year 1900 BCE, 1900 years before the Common Era. And this man wrote one of the first law codes in the world, one of the first times that anybody ever made a law. It was this guy. And in the prologue to the laws, he says that he has brought justice to the lands of Sumer and Akkad, and that he is close to the gods, and that his first listed achievement for the laws is, he says this, he said, "I made the father support his children. I made the child support his father. I made the father stand by his children. I made the children stand by their fathers." That was the first statement of the first law code that we have record of in human history. And then Lipit Ishtar proceeds to do what? Say what it means to be married. So we're on to something here. Let's try to track that for a minute, because if you look at the history of this amazing institution, and if you look at all the anthropologists that have looked at what is marriage, here's there's a lot of diversity. There's a lot of variability. There's a lot of change over time. But running right through the middle of it is this constant idea. And I think of it as a kind of a gift, as a society's gift. And here's the gift. It says to me as the child, these are my parents. It says that the male and the female whose sexual act helps to create a child, the man and the woman who biologically make the child, are also there to help raise the child and are there for one another. That's the core universal marriage concept, according to the scholars who have looked at it the most closely. Marriage is the way that I, as a child, am given the gift of the two people who helped to make me. When Lippitt Ishtar said, I made the father stand by his children, he was recognizing that in human societies, the strongest bond in the species is between the mother and the child. Very few mothers abandon their children. Fathers do. And therefore, the institution of marriage is to bring the father into that family unit and say that the mother and child alone is a sociologically incomplete unit, that we bring the father in. So by creating marriage laws, Lippitt Ishtar makes the father stand by his children. That's the first thing that humans that we know of said about what marriage is. It ought to give us a little clue that marriage has this enormously important public purpose. It gives me as a child the gift of loving and being loved by the man and the woman who made me. Marriage does many other good things for people. And it does many good things for society, but across our history as a species, this is the fundamental thing that it does. Now, you know, and that's why we say, that's the main reason why Jennifer and I think Doug say, marriage is a social institution, that the marriage is bigger than the couple rather than it being the other way around. When I heard the two good presentations this morning, I thought of Dietrich Bonhoeffer, the great theologian who died in a German prison cell in 1943. And shortly before he was killed by the Nazis, he wrote a letter to a young engaged couple. As a pastor, he wrote a letter to them. And he said to me, it just summed up the whole thing. He was talking about what marriage is, and he said, from this day on, meaning the day you marry, from this day on, it won't be your love that keeps your marriage alive. It will be your marriage that keeps your love alive. Isn't that something? That's the whole deal, I think. And what a sad time it is in North America that I think so many people, especially younger people, would have a hard time understanding the meaning of that statement. The idea that the marriage is something bigger than the couple, and that it's not you don't depend on your love for one another to keep your marriage going. It's the other way around. You depend on your marriage to keep your love going. It's not, when everything is working right, the lovers, there's the love, and then there's the institution of marriage. There's participating in this social form that has been given to you, and it's the form that can keep the love going for over the course of your lifetime. So I really think that this question of, is the vow larger than the couple? or is the couple larger than the vow, is the most important question we have to face. The most important challenge that you in this room, we together, if I can say that, we all who are concerned about the health of marriage as an institution, this is the main case we have to make. That in a time and in a place where all the lawyers, it seems like, and the jurists want to tell us that the couple is bigger than the vow, we raise our hands with Dietrich Bonhoeffer and others and we say, no, the vow is bigger than the couple because we care about a certain gift that we give to our children. That's what it is. That's what I think brings us here today. It's what brings me here today. And maybe to me that's what we have to keep in mind and is what we're trying to do out there in society. Now, I want to have time for questions, so I'm going to go quickly and just mention four ideas very quickly that I think are help us to move toward that goal of recovering the meaning of marriage for this era that we live in. I love the idea of the marriage index. I think it's terrific because, you know, the big things we have to do, if I can say we in this fraternal and sororal sense, we who care about marriage and family, the big two things we have to do is have a conversation and set a goal. The conversation is, what is marriage? We have to have a much broader and deeper and richer and ethically and intellectually serious answer to the question, what is marriage? Or else we won't make progress. So we must have a conversation about what is marriage as a society. And secondly, we must set a goal. We won't achieve it unless we are clear about what it is we're trying to achieve. For me, the goal is to have a greater proportion of our children growing up with their two married parents. Instead of having it go this way, we want first to arrest it and then have it go this way. That's the goal we want. And since many, many of our fellow citizens in both of our countries either have never thought about that as a goal or would actively reject the idea of setting that as a goal, what we need to do is have a conversation and a debate and bring our best selves and our best energy to it so we can persuade and get a broad agreement in our society that that is a legitimate and worthy and humane child-friendly goal for us to have. So we have the conversation and we set the goal. And a tool like this marriage index, I think, can be a useful way of doing those two things, to generating a public conversation. Because let's face it, it's a bit of a frustrating time for people like us. Because it seems like so many of the trend lines are going the other direction. Not all of them, but many of them. And it also seems like many of the opinion leaders are not really in agreement with us. Particularly in Canada, I have to say, the craziest anti-family nuts south of the border that I have to live with all the time, they can only look in wondrous amazement and admiration at what you have achieved in the legal domain in Canada. I mean, the stuff out of beyond conjugality, the idea that we're just going to completely dethrone marriage as a privileged institution. Not only that, we're going to completely get beyond the notion of the conjugal couple. Well, my goodness, that's just, they can't even imagine making such progress. And so really, I don't know, I thought you people were supposed to be, you know, moderate and sedate. Oh, but oh no, you know, you're the cutting edge leaders of the trend that we're, so I don't know. So we need to kind of work together in this difficult time to have a conversation about what is marriage and to challenge with smiles on our faces and with hope in our hearts to challenge and reverse some of these trends. I think the marriage index is good. Very quickly, I'm just going to list a couple more